Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that you all hope for. We all hope for, even. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful team from the EV Cafe. And today I have the wonderful John Curtis, JC. Welcome.
Hello, I'm really buzzing for today because this is car chat. This is exciting chat.
It has to be said in the pre-chat with our guest, who is about to be announced, John did get rather excited. Now, we have a wonderful innovator, pioneer and collaborator, as always, on the EV Cafe, doing some fabulous things in the EV space. But we're particularly excited about this man's bio, Ian Mills, Technical Director from Spirit EV. Welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me.
Well, it genuinely is our pleasure, because as we were chatting in the beginning, we found out some really cool facts. And one of the things that really quite excites me most, because I've always loved Lewis Hamilton. He was probably the kind of guy that got me most interested in Formula One. But you did something pretty cool for Lewis Hamilton by giving him cars.
Absolutely. Well, the in my previous career and previous job at Continental and Zytec, they developed the system cars that went onto the Mercedes that was trialed and tested and was the first race winning car systems with Mercedes with Lewis.
One of the few things in cars that gets me excited is that. And for those of you, because we don't like an acronym, and John challenged me on this. He said, "Oh, I bet you can't tell me what KERS means." And I could.
And I was right.
Kinetic energy. Well, I said recuperation, it's recovery system. But it's fantastic. You've had a career, haven't you, Ian, in that has really captured the imagination, starting out as an apprentice in Lucas. But, you know, talk us through just how, you know, your journey has gone from that stage to see some real pinnacles. And I'm really keen to hear about the Formula 3000 journey and a few things that happened along the road there.
Yeah, sure. Lucas Apprentice, absolutely. One of the old school engineering apprenticeships that was, we obviously hear a lot about Lucas and regarding all the acronyms that maybe surround it. But joking apart, Lucas had a really good engineering school and they offered a really wide, broad-based engineering training, and that incorporated mechanical, electrical, pneumatic, etc. And what that did provide me with was a really good background into the understanding of machining, manufacturing, electronics, electrics, and pneumatics. So a really good broad-based spectrum for the first 2 years of my training. Some of it was standing operating milling machines or lathes and grinding machines, etc. And, you know, in a boy of 16, 17, etc., it had its moments of monotony. But joking apart, it offered and provided a really good understanding as to, you know, how mechanically things go together and what works and tolerance, etc. So that was the start of the broad-based training, and then it was a four-year program, and basically you were at the engineering school for 2 years, supported by education externally to that. And after that, you went into round the other Lucas factories to understand about ignition modules and lighting, etc. So being the guy that I was at 16, 17, and being a car fanatic that I also was, and trying to keep my Mini on the road and trying to prove the performance, etc., we had the Lucas Racing Department next door to the engineering training school. So being the character that I am, I made a real nuisance of myself, and I was in and out of there because it was exciting, and they had race jackets on and spotlights in there and everything else, and I just made a real nuisance of myself and sort of befriended me really in reality. And I was really fortunate that it just so happens life's all about luck and timing and everything else. And when I came out of my broad-based training, they actually had a position that that I could enter in terms of they hadn't had apprentices in the racing department before, but they had a requirement because they were a bit understaffed, I think is the honest answer. And they knew my character and knew my background, and I managed to land on them and go off and support a lot of their activities. They were mainly doing ignition control systems, they were doing fuel injection systems and general race support. I think it was a bit of a loss leader, Lucas Racing department, but ultimately I landed on them, and I started my career then within the racing department and went all over Europe and supporting world sports cars, Formula 3000, Formula 3, and a little bit of touring car and rallying. So I was very green to it. I learned quickly and understood the etiquette of what you have to do at the race circuit. And ultimately, you can't change the green flag at the start. It's all got to be there and ready, and you can't dilly-dally. So that also taught me really good background to, you know, to try and prioritize tasks and prioritize my time to make sure that ultimately, you could supply what you needed to supply at the end of the day. And I think we spoke briefly in the pre-chat regarding I think I was the youngest apprentice or to travel to Le Mans in the late 80s, and we had a system on the sports car, the Silkut Jaguars, the ignition system, and we didn't have to do a lot because it was just be there as support, right, really, if something went wrong. Fortunately, it didn't. Those 2 years, they won Le Mans, and it was all very efficient and very reliable. So ultimately, there was a lot of standing around. It's quite tough being trying to stay awake for 24 hours, if I'm honest. I had age on my side, but it's still found it quite tough.
It's interesting you mentioned that, your age, because back mm-hmm. then you were a relatively young, green person. You've yep. gone through your training, you've learned the Definitely. Ropes. And here I see in front of me a very confident, capable, organized human being who's articulate, who's able to make very, very complex things sound quite simple. Has motorsport and you being involved in this industry really shaped the man that we see in front of us today?
I definitely think motorsport was a really good grounding. I think the structure surrounding the engineering apprenticeship helped, and having to juggle the academic with that, you know, that was quite tough, and having a life at 17 and attending and learning and training and meeting the requirements, and then on the side of that doing the academia that we needed to do to progress to an engineer, it definitely has the racing element. It was long, hard hours, but it didn't seem it because no. I was so enthusiastic. I'm a real car guy at heart anyway. And the thought of, you know, taking something from ninth to fifth on the end result of a race, it, you know, what more enthusiasm can be generated than that, really? And we worked 80 hours a week at times, you know, and supporting the early starts, driving down to Snetterton, and even we all know, or Silverstone or wherever we were going, and test days, and we all know that even in the heat of summer, Snetterton's a pretty cold, windswept place. lots of support, lots of being on call to jump in if something goes wrong. But likewise, when vehicles come into the pits, and you've got to, as it was then, there was no telemetry. You had to plug in your data logger, suck out all of the information, run away with it, not get in the way of the team, and, you know, and ultimately and then go and analyze the data. And you had to do it and make a difference. You had to be there to make a difference. So ultimately it was really good, and you had to go on your gut instinct. And what it did teach me was to learn to follow your gut a little bit, and to learn to understand the engineering practices that I'd been taught. So I think I grew up very quickly. I think I learned a very massive amount of information in a very small amount of time. Lots of time on the test bed, calibrating fuel injection systems, trying to get an extra half a horsepower or a little bit of torque or whatever it was, and having some failures along the way. And fortunately, I didn't manage to blow anything up on the test beds, but I witnessed it happening, and I knew that it taught you to check what you're doing, be concentrated all the time, keep focused in the times you need to be focused, and you've got to be the sort of character that's in the background, but you've got to be a doer in the race and fraternity. So you've got to be there to jump on call when you need to, and but also you've got to be reliable. And it taught me a really good work ethic, and it taught me to push the boundaries, not only in trying to gain horsepower, but trying to gain reliability, because you can be the fastest one on the start grid, but it's got to be going at the end of the race, hasn't it? Yeah absolutely.
It's what's clear to me, Ian, is that all of this stuff has ultimately led to a very competent and widely recognized individual as an expert in your space. And it's an unusual mix, right? Because you've referred to luck. You got lucky with the guys next door. I always say the harder you work, the luckier you get. And it's clearly hard work that has, opened up those doors for you being that reliable person. But here's the really interesting mix for me, because I have gut instinct. I have no engineering principle or, academic understanding. I have a lot of gut, but not... Some would say too much, but a lot of gut instinct, but not the academic side. But clearly you've brought gut instinct and engineering principles together to come up with incredible solutions. I mean, is that something you now kind of, do you sense check yourself? Like gut instinct, I'll just check that with engineering principle. How does that work for you?
I think that's just down to experience. At the end of the day, you can't teach experience, can you? No. Pushing the boundaries in any industry, you go off basic principles, but you also go off experience, and you learn as you go along the way as to to try not to go down a blind avenue of something that's not going to be value added. And I think it's recognizing when you're halfway down a blind alley that you actually know this hasn't got legs. Going to have issues, and then to not be afraid to say, yep, we tried it, it didn't work, U-turn, go down another route and get it right. But the more my sort of career has progressed, the more less blind alleys you go down, really. And that is purely down to experience. The gut instinct, I'd have to credit my father with, really, sitting in his garage and bleeding the brakes on his old Mini, and when he had 6, 7, 8 years old, and being around him in the garage and taking things apart. And it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it, as a sort of natural person that's interested in engineering, is you'd get a toy for Christmas, you'd take it apart and see how it worked, not play with it, and 9 times out of 10 you'd put it back together, unless it was something really, really, really badly put together, and you'd break it, and then but that, another lesson's learned, I suppose. So I think it's bringing all of that together to generate the foundation and the platform for a real good start in automotive engineering.
Ian, I just want to ask you a question that I've always wanted to ask somebody who's worked in the motor racing area, and I've never had the courage. When you work as part of a team and you describe yourself as providing just a small part of this overall winning car, but those parts are vital, every single part has to work to its maximum efficiency to become a winner. When a driver's talent runs out and he bins your work of art, your fabulous car, do you, as part of the crew, just sigh and think, oh God, I've got to do a rebuild now, I'm just destroyed? Or do you just say, okay, great, let's all get together and crack on and do the job? How does it feel?
That's a really good question. I will answer it honestly. ultimately, race teams are team. The word team is, you know, that is, you know, you are expected to do a task and a job. And like I say, we were a sort of a third party supplier of product to the team. So we were part of that team, but we weren't actually employed by the team, per se. So it's irrelevant. The team is only as good as the sum of the parts in it, really. So ultimately, if a driver bins it and goes off and you've got to do a full rebuild, you know that is just the hand that you've been dealt. There may be some side glances along the way and a bit of silence when the driver walks back through, and the good drivers would always come and sit with you and support you, to be honest. Even if they just sat there and did nothing other than support, they would always offer, you know, moral support, and you just knew that you weren't going to sleep that night and you'd have to do your bits. The more frustrating stuff was the sort of the intermittent faults, the ones that, you know, you couldn't really. And that also, again, taught me gut instinct, to follow your gut, to do the principle, to do the practice, but not to be afraid to make the call. Let's put a new harness on it. You know, let's do this, let's do that, you know, ultimately, because you can go down a long way of trying to repair something, but actually you've got to make the judgment call of it could be this, it could be that, what can solve all those issues. So it could be anything in between. So yes, we had some interesting elements of that. I mean, in the Formula 3 and the Formula 3000 area that I worked in at times, there was a wide mix of drivers, some that would bring, you know, a lot to the team in terms of talent, some that would bring a lot to the team in terms of sponsorship. They didn't always have the same element of driving skill, but they were all a requirement, you know, to make sure the team went racing and the vehicles went racing, etc. So we tended to know which ones may be it and which ones were the steady eddies, and ultimately, I was just frustrated. I always thought I could get in there and drive. I was just afraid. Just frustrated being 6'2". I couldn't actually fit in it, so I had that ruled me out. So that was a big frustration for me, to be honest with you. But I had to get my kicks in a rally car externally to the racing side. But yeah, I think it's you just know you've got to do it. There's no resentment. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the pizza's coming in, the Coca-Cola comes in, and you know, ultimately you've just crack your tools open. And what is good is that you wouldn't necessarily be doing your job. You know, maybe I'd be cleaning off an under tray of something because it would help the cause. And personally, I didn't mind doing it, and I wanted to do it because I was there. It meant we all went home earlier, and we've actually fired it up and proved that it worked quicker, and that took a lot of stress away, and we could even maybe get a couple of hours sleep before we had to be back at the circuit the next morning.
And it stood you in good stead because, you know, Spirit EV, Paul, I was just about to hand to you because Spirit EV has come around, and all of those lessons you've learned are really key. Paul, talk to us.
Well, I'm really curious because there's sort of two companies that you've been involved in. So I know that you were managing director at RBEV before, which and maybe you can tell our listeners, because obviously, you know, you've had a lot of automotive experience, and perhaps you can pick out some of the key experiences that stood you in good stead to take that step into RBEV and then onto this Spirit EV, which I really like the concept of. This is clever, it's scalable, and it's very much about empowering industry to do better by collaboration, or at least that's how it feels. Talk to us first a little bit about RBEV and some of the exciting projects that have been done there, and then that transition into this Spirit EV, which really is going to, I don't know, change industry, I think.
Yeah, sure. It's RBWEV. So RBW stands for our founders' three children. So that Rose, Becky and Wesley, that's where that comes from, if anybody's wondering. and after my racing element, I sort of thought I'd better get a life and went into mainstream supply of fuel injection systems, ignition systems to mainstream Jaguar, Land Rover, etc. And then I eventually ended up at Zytec, which probably you're aware of in terms of in terms of an engineering specialists, and they were subsequently bought by Continental. So ultimately, I got into the position where we were developing an electric platform, and that reverted back to sort of I joined Zitec in 2001, and I was engaged to work on a parallel hybrid truck for GM, and that was my first foray into electric vehicles, really. So ultimately, Zitec built up a lot of background in electric smart vehicles, the KERS element of the thing, that, you know, it wasn't really my project, everything, but obviously a bit player in that. And we also developed a lot of the elements for NEV market entry for into China for electric vehicles. So Zitec Continental had a platform of electric and expertise of electrification. So when RBW's founder, Peter Swain, he'd been in other industries, and he decided that he's a car guy also, and he came up with the concept that electric cars, yes, they're emerging. This was sort of 2016. Electric cars are emerging, but they're all a little bit samey, a little bit not much character to them, etc. And he was in the classic car industry. He was running a restoration business, really, for classic cars, and he came up with the concept, well, why can't we build a brand new classic vehicle but with a modern architecture and electric platform underneath it? A, it makes it more relevant. B, it takes away a lot of the issues that people have with classic cars and the unreliability, etc., due to aging components and old-fashioned harnesses, etc. So so Peter engaged our team, the team that was at Continental, to look at generating a vehicle. So when RBW came to look at generating that, we offered a platform, but also offered the ability to RBW to become a worldwide manufacturer. So to move forward, to be relevant, to produce brand new vehicles, RBW needed to have all the credentials to be able to do that, to register, to produce, and all the quality elements behind that. So RBW was engaged with Continental in that respect. My position at the time was chief engineer for vehicle integration at Continental. And so what we did is we worked very closely, and I pretty much just concentrated on this project with RBW and with Peter Swain, and we produced a production vehicle and all the steps along the way. So it ran through a fully validated vehicle life cycle. It was accelerated. The budgets weren't of a major OEM that we could offer multi million pounds worth of vehicle development. But we did the right life cycle. We did three sample vehicles, A, B, C sample vehicles to produce production intent, and then pilot builds. And in the background, we were getting ECE Reg 100 on the battery system and on the electrification platform. We were engaging with VOSA and DVLA to make sure that, you know, we met all the criteria to produce brand new vehicles. So fundamentally accelerating that, RBW produces, I think everybody's aware what type of vehicle it is, produces brand new electric sports vehicles with a classic look to them. The architecture beneath it is all OEM standard DV tested components, and ultimately, therefore, de-risking that element of it by developing anything. It's an architecture of bringing it all together. RBW were really, really clever. The fact that we kept hold of all of the IP and all of the patents and everything was done that, and which allowed RBW to push forward and get some some capital behind it and to get some investment behind it. And at that point, back in probably 2 years, coming up to 2 years ago, RBW was funded in the way that it was upscaled. We opened a large manufacturing facility, and we were producing brand new vehicles on a low volume scale, but it was all regulated, it was all compliant, it was all, we had operations manager came in from large OEM that stood behind everything. Everything was process driven, everything was, you know, all torque checked and everything that. So we were producing brand new vehicles to a regulated standard. We registered in them for the correct routes as a brand new vehicle. First owner on the logbook V5C, and allowed us to produce brand new electric vehicles on a lower scale. That then built up and moved forward, and that side of the business is going really well. We're also looking at producing new models, and we're always continuously engineering and continuously improving the models that we have. And obviously components change. So ultimately we're looking at continuous improvement that. But what that did make us realize was that externally to that, Spirit EV was generated the fact that we had a platform that had all of the IP or the strategies or the battery management system or the harness supply. So we could supply that to third parties in a complete system, in a widget, in a single component, in a battery, in a drivetrain, in a harness, anything in between, integration engineering services to allow third parties and you know, maybe people that want to do rebirths, etc., to allow them to do all of that. We've done all the hard yards, we've done all the development costs, and we can do it and expedite that to market, basically. So that was the thought train behind Spirit EV. Now, we launched Spirit EV at SEMA in November, back in Vegas, in the SEMA show, and we had amazing raft of inquiries of people that want our services. So it was really, really a great concept, and that's sort of the background of how Spirit EV was born.
And so I'm just trying to kind of go through. So I've got two questions. One, in terms of how many vehicles are you currently producing as RBW? What's the sort of numbers we're talking about? Is it 20 a year, 50 a year, 100 a year, what, 10 a year?
Well, the current through rate it target is 4 a month. Based in our UK site. We have engaged a lot of our market is North America now, and a lot of the original vehicles of that type were actually sold in North America. So we've engaged and we're building a satellite cookie cutter at our factory and processes that we have, and we've launched it in the States, in the Virginia County. Okay. So that's enabled us to double our production of the vehicle, and also helps with our logistics of moving vehicles and around, etc.
Yeah. And so you've got to have a favorite because you're a car buff. You love your cars. What is the favorite one that you, because I mean, I saw obviously in pictures and different stuff, I've seen the one that I would have, but what is the one that you would have or you have? Which one of the ones you produce?
My favorite is probably the GT version. So this is based on, you know, we don't mention names, but it's based on a classic platform, which is a fastback GT.
Yeah, I'm well familiar with the shape and design of it, and my mum had an MG back in the day. I'm just saying, nothing more than that.
So I like the one with the horse on the front. That's the one I liked. Is that okay, the same? Yeah, so yeah, you can tell now I'm not a car person, but that's I like the one with the knee. But okay, anyway, so yeah. I guess coming on to the Spirit EV bit then. So what does that business look like? So is this going to empower sort of like a small business to just kind of like take a vehicle like from scratch, or is it they've got a restoration project? Is it a bit of both? How does it work? And what do you see the volumes looking like for that in terms of across America and maybe in the UK as well?
Yeah, it's anything in between that and either extreme of that. We've now taken on another building, which is our engineering center. We obviously have all of our knowledge here and the team here that have developed our original product. So ultimately, we can scale that onto any platform that we acquire. That could be there's a cost point to it, but that could be a one-off. That could be somebody wants to do a run of recreation vehicles, you know, based on, you know, on a brand lifting a existing brands, or it could be a single application of somebody may want our battery and our battery management systems and our controller. We have the IP, we have our own controller. So ultimately, we have a fully joined up system. If somebody came and said, we want to produce 50 of these type of sports cars, we need these metrics to be met, we need this performance, this range, etc. we could just scale what we have. It's, you know, it's systems engineering, it's electronics engineering to put the capacity in the batteries to select the right motor and drivetrain for that application. And that could be anything from a land speed record at one end of the scale that's got no range requirements, but it's got pure performance, to a city car, a rebirth city car at the under the end of the scale that isn't all about performance, is all about battery capacity and range and drivability and everything else. What we have determined is, you know, we've all experienced more and more of electric vehicles. You know, my dad is an electric vehicle currently, and what we are finding is that the gap between classic vehicles and mainstream electric vehicles is so large now that actually if people like the look, and as who doesn't like the look of a classic vehicle, you know, style never goes out of fashion, does it? So if the gap between that is so huge that people now, if you drop them into a classic vehicle, probably couldn't operate the choke or this or that or the other. So ultimately we've bridged that gap so somebody can have a classic looking beautiful vehicle that's not run of the mill. It has lots of nice design cues on it, but it also has the modern technology that people want, the audio, the Apple AirPlay, all of those, the satellite, all of those elements, and the ergonomics internally that are surrounding that. We have our own trim shops and we develop our own interiors, so it can be based on anything. You can start with a single component or you can start with a full turnkey vehicle, and we can do anything in between.
I'm fascinated by you. And the reason I'm fascinated, Ian, is because you're a car guy. And part of being a car guy,
unfortunately,
part of being a car guy is the internal combustion.
Expensive hobby,
yeah. Yeah, darn right. And the internal combustion engine is something which is a fundamental part of the classic car experience for an awful lot of people. Do you find that people miss the sound of an internal combustion engine? Because, you know, if you open up a classic 911, you know that it's a 911. You can tell it has a certain way of speaking to you that you lose if you rip all that out and put in battery electric. Now, as a battery electric proponent, I can see the benefits of that, cleaner air and cheaper to run and less moving parts and all that stuff. But there's a little bit of my soul that dies when you take out a perfectly good internal combustion engine vehicle from a Porsche 911 from the 60s. How do you square the circle as a car guy?
It's a great question. It's not the first time we've been asked it, and it's something that, you know, we've considered all the way along the way. I think my first exposure to electric vehicles, I think it was purely getting my head around the fact that the electric motor is just a way of generating power and torque. There's obviously no tailpipe emissions. And I think the world has changed a little bit to it being not as socially acceptable to yes, the sound, you know, the sound and the smell, you know, as a car person you know, we understand that, but it's not really as socially acceptable as it was. And I think also the instant talk and the way that they drive, and if you want a soundtrack to it, we could sound generate it, you know, and you could really mess with people's head, and you can have a V12 one day and a V8 another day and a popping cracking supercharger the next day. You can generate that sound. It's about the drivability, and it's about the instant talk. So where, yes, you can't ever get around the fact that this was originally had an IC engine, or ultimately, for somebody that's doing a sort of a modification to a current vehicle, yes, it would. But the benefits start to outweigh, because the charging infrastructure is there, so it's more usable. You can go into the cities and the towns with them without getting stared at and people, you know, thinking what's that noise, etc. But you know, we've still got the race side of it to listen to the nice engines, etc. So I just think I completely understand the question, and I completely get where you're coming from. But I just think you need to experience how different they are, and the good now outweighs the what you're losing.
I agree.
In my opinion,
I agree entirely.
And I think I did, just this week, Ian, I was over seeing trucks become electric, and there was actually a race truck in the reception area of the company that I went to see. And it's interesting because I've seen a bit of truck racing going on here in the UK, and I know that one of the drivers that is there, who's been a champion for a number of years now, is now considering, well, what's next? Is it electric trucks? And how much better are they in terms of performance? And in terms of performance, they are night and day better in that particular world. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, supercars and sports cars, as we've seen in many a drag race video, the electric cars are just mind-blowingly quick in terms of performance. So if speed is your drug, then it's kind of the electric car that wins out. But if it's just the sound, or even that sort of classic vehicle look, at least you've kind of got an answer for both of those questions, haven't you? With what you're doing.
Absolutely. That's the majesty of it, really. You know, it's something that looks beautiful, but is reliable, is safe. They drive like sports vehicles. And part of the majesty of what we do is developing the product for RVW. The team and myself, we've learned so much about electric vehicles. We want to produce, you know, they're not a high volume production vehicle. We want to produce a fun, nicely driving, well balanced vehicle. And that isn't just about strapping all the components in and producing a vehicle that's functional. We produce vehicles that are sports cars. We produce vehicles that have better balance ratio than they had originally. We produce vehicles that we give it to a reporter and say, go do your best, go break it, you know, because they can't, because ultimately that, you know, as we all know, they're very efficient, but they're fun, you know. When you utilizing that instant torque, when you're utilizing the pure drivability, you know, that, and they meet, in my opinion, that niche of what we need to produce. The world's moved on. We've moved on. It doesn't mean we don't love cars and drivability and sports cars and having that smile on your face, you know, in the day. But there's also benefits behind a classic looking brand new electric vehicle, soft top, convertible. You could talk to each other. You could hear the birds in the trees. So where you've lost that, lost one thing, you've gained something else, you know.
Oh, Ian, if only we had tried one.
Well, never say never. Never say never. You're always welcome. You're welcome to come and join us. We're based in Lichfield, so you're welcome to come and visit our factory and come and sample our products. Our engineering centre is we've managed to secure the building next door to where we are building production, so it's really good hand in hand. So Spirit EVs can be run out of there. We're also looking at the elements within the States for the same conversion element or the same low production run. And this doesn't need to be vehicles. The platform that we have and the architecture that we have can cover vans, can cover commercial vehicles, can cover vehicles that need to go inside a building that can't produce tailpipe emissions. It can be anything in between. The majesty of what we have is the whole architecture. It's completely joined up. It's a one-shop deal. They haven't got to go through the pick and place of all the components, integrating them together with systems engineering and validation. We can pick and place. Yeah. We've got all the strategies, got all the controllers to do it. And we own the IP, so, you know.
Yeah. And so, but to be clear, RBW and Spirit EV are two separate companies. Why was that? What was the idea behind sort of separating out the two companies? Is it so there's no sort of like a Chinese wall? Is that what they call it? Like in terms of data and the customers and all that type of stuff? What is it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very conscious that that we don't want to have any cross pollination of of any issues in terms of security, and that's why our current engineering center is going to be TSAC approved. So ultimately, we're going to be in a position where customers can come to us. They may have a product that is cutting edge, and it works both ways. So ultimately, we can be fully compliant with all of those controls, and it's not going to filter back into our mothership in terms of our other business. The separation is we're producing cars, we want to produce cars, we're doing continuous engineering, and Spirit EV may supply engineering services to RBW also in terms of continuous improvement and next motor integration, etc. But standalone and separate from that, and it needs to be defined, it needs to be separate, because ultimately there can't be cross-pollination, and the customers that we have need to be clear and sure about that it is a separate entity, all the security measures are around that, and obviously there's going to be no issues in that respect, because we have had some really interesting inquiries for some interesting end customers, and it's all about security, and I can't emphasize enough about this.
It's integrity, isn't it, Ian?
It is. It's all about absolutely. And we have defined bays; they're all sealed off. You know, the phone systems, etc. No cameras. All of the stuff that I would have learned back through the racing stuff, in terms of the stuff through the prototyping stuff I did in my previous career, and all the controls we have around that. So all of that and the team that we have around that is all brought forward, and that's what we do.
Team, that's the word. That's what I want to talk about, your people. Tell us about the scale and the breadth of the people that you have in the team that deliver these vehicles and systems.
Sure, absolutely. So a lot of the team are people that I've worked with previously, and some of the other team have worked with previously. We know that they have the required skill set. Some of them have migrated over from other roles and positions into our current thing. So we have a really broad-based team of experts, really. So a lot of the team have come from the race side of it. So our prototyping manager, he's got a racing background. He understands all the development, the suspension systems, et cetera, to make sure that we get really good balance, we get really good understanding with and driver feel, and it's a well-producing vehicle. Industry experts within batteries and battery management. So we've scooped up the people that we've utilized and we've known for in the industry of the last 20 years of electrification platform. We knew the targets that we had. We've managed to secure the targets that we had, and we've even managed to secure the managing director from Continental, Neil Heslington, has joined us as our COO now. So ultimately, he looks after the whole platform, everything else, and both factors between the spirit and the thing. He's a really experienced, really good guy in the industry. So we realize it's all about the team. Number one is, are they a doer? Number two is, ultimately, we the nucleus has got to be of doers. Are they a team player? Have they got the skill sets? Are they prepared to push the boundaries? Are they, you know, what you'd like? And we've achieved such a great balance. We've got all of the doers that we want. We've got all the experts that we need in the certain genres, in terms of motor, in terms of battery management, and in vehicle ergonomics and drivability and suspension design. So I'm really proud of the team we've built here. And I think, you know, as an offering, the team has got a massive value, you know, to anybody that comes through the door and wants this doing, because I don't know where else you would get that team from together in this nucleus and offering the service that we can.
Amazing. Outstanding.
Doesn't it sound absolutely amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, as I'm listening, I'm sort of hearing, and Ian, I suspect that you knew a lot of great people through your career, and you've really focused on those people that didn't really get up your nose because they were either academic and off in the clouds, or just had gut instinct but didn't have the engineering understanding, people like me, but were real doers. And it just is exciting to think that all of that knowledge is getting crammed into something that is now going to go into sort of people with great customers all over America, all over the UK, probably all over the world, right? You know, because we can all think of places in the world that are famous for having lots of like big internal combustion engine vehicles or real fascination with classic vehicles. And now there seems to be a solution that will allow anybody to kind of really go high end and but classic, you know, classic or whatever, electric vehicles.
Well, it could be on road, off road, utility. It could be anything. You know, we can offer anything that's a propulsion and a vehicle. We can offer that solution, and we can take it from.
You said vans earlier.
Yeah.
What a waste.
Absolutely. But. We'll just go back and touch on the fact you said about the academics. Sure. We have academics here also, they certainly have the place in our position because they're cutting edge and they are very pivotal to understanding the real in-depth of the knowledge and the in-depth of the product and the pushing the boundaries for where we want to go with our new, with our new products also. You know, there's certain academics here, but there's a balance. There's a really balanced team. There's a really high-end brainiacs, as we'd call them, I think, in reality. But there's also the guys that have come from and they've empowered themselves and they've trained themselves and they've come from a position of a fitter in a garage. And, you know, we now have those. They're really great guys. And, you know, because they've learned that side of it. They've empowered themselves and we've got those assembling some of the vehicles and doing some of the sub-assemblies. So we've got all genres and all elements. We also engage with a lot of the local colleges and everything to try and grow some of our talent externally. So we do a lot with them so we can put some of our requirements into their course and their curriculum. So ultimately, and they come and do work experience with us, see what we're all about. And we've engaged a couple of the guys directly from the unis and the colleges locally.
It was one of the things that I thought about early on when you mentioned about apprenticeships and the value of apprenticeships, you know, from your first job at Lucas and then also into the motorsport bit. Because as we reflect on our industry today, it is one where apprenticeships are moderately rare. There's not enough people coming into the industry from all over. But it sounds like your answer to my question would have been exactly what you've just told us, that you're investing in apprenticeships yourselves gear up for the next generation.
Yeah, completely. We have apprentice programs here and I'm probably biased because, you know, that's the way that I did it. And apprenticeships sort of died off after I was probably one of the last ones through I was privileged to be able to do it. I actually followed in my father's footsteps. He did a Lucas apprenticeship probably about 30 years before myself. So I think it's not just about, it's not just about the knowledge. It's also about the regime around it and the work ethic and everything else. And I think, in my opinion, I think that's a really good grounding, and it's the understanding, if I do this over here, how does it affect that over there? Yeah. And it's all the broad-based knowledge surrounding that. So we've got some great apprentices that come through. We've got our own body shop as well, and our own fabrication body modifications. And we've taken guys that have done that, and they were guys that came out of school, didn't know what they want to do. The father was a car painter or what have you, and we've empowered them, and now they're doing all the body and white change, they're doing all of some of the electrification installations, etc. So it's all about the
brilliant
empowering the people around you and growing the team.
Well, talking of empowering the people around you, we're about to enter into a tradition. So we have a tradition on the podcast, and if you've listened to the podcast, you'll know what's about to happen, but maybe you didn't listen to the end. But this is always a little special tradition. We've always wanted, you know, to give people a wish, but we were given the EV Cafe wand. So this is a magic wand. It was 3D printed by one of our listeners. It even has the little lightning bolt, as you can see there. And I'm about to pass this to you. So through the camera, okay, it will come, and you get to take the wand. And there we go. There you go.
There we go. Yeah. Okay, I've got
the wand. See, look, he's got it. Absolutely. It's appeared as if by magic in his hand on the other side. There we go. What would you wish for the industry, I think, as a wider thing, in an altruistic sense? I mean, you can use the wish for anything you desire, of course. You know, you could, you know, make sure that the business goes gangbusters or whatever. But what wish would you want for our industry at this point in time to ensure that, you know, things go well for the future?
Well, that's a great question, and probably wasn't what I wasn't expecting. But I think in reality, obviously, I wish that we grow our business in terms of spirit, and that we get some great customers through, and we deliver to them the end product that they want, and enable them to do that in a faster and a more cost effective way. But also, I wish that our background, that we are become world leaders in terms of, well, we believe we're world leaders, but we become more recognised, because I don't think we're you know, as recognised as we may be in the forum, and hopefully this will help to show what we offer and what we do. So I wish that we've got happy customers, so us supplying a good product, and that we become the badge on the back of everybody's new vehicle, as to powered by Spirit EV or powered by something like that.
Brilliant. That'll do for me. John, this has been an exceptional chat, hasn't it? One very very grounded in vehicles and cars, a special thing close to your heart. What are your thoughts?
I want to thank Ian for changing the face of driving. And you talked earlier about kinetic energy recovery systems, or KERS. As an EV driver, we now know that as regenerative braking, something that we take for granted. And the difference between driving an internal combustion engine vehicle and driving an electric vehicle is KERS, is that regenerative braking system. Not just because it recovers energy, but because it improves the driving experience. It improves going into a corner, being able to allow that regenerative braking to slow you down, store the energy, and then accelerate early out. And as a driver, I can't thank you enough for that. I would say that's the greatest development of driving in my lifetime, alongside sat-nav. I think those two things together have changed my world. So thank you, my friend. It's an honour to speak to you.
Thank you very much. I mean, we offer both sat nav and regenerative braking, absolutely. But no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, whenever I get in an IC engine and you lift off and you think, oh, this is sailing on, what's going on with this? And because you use it in your everyday vehicle, and it's free energy. You know, yeah. why not charge your battery? Brilliant. The way? Yeah, it's free energy, and it improves the drivability, and
you're
ultimately
genius.
I often say that, but I appreciate your comments.
Well, Ian, this has been a joy, and I would really recommend that anybody that has any kind of interest in electrification of classic vehicles head over to Spirit EV or RBW. I mean, obviously you can buy directly, but if you're in the industry and you, I mean, it kind of feels like this is a business in a box for somebody. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you know, you've. I mean, I think I saw a number somewhere over 1,800 different sort of documents that you can help, like, people build these vehicles right from the business, you know, right from the ground up. So it kind of feels like a business in a box where they can just kind of know their own customer base, build out some vehicles for that customer base, and then build on from there. And what you've done is exceptional, cramming all of that knowledge over the years that you've built up into this business that you can now plonk into businesses all over the world. It is quite exceptional.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Probably we haven't touched on it as much as we could, but absolutely, we've got some really good operations and process guides here. And although we can assist, or we can build the first, well, we can run all of that process documentation and all the manufacturing to third parties, and we can monitor that, and also the aftermarket element of it, because if people are utilizing this system, and it sort of stands alone from other elements that they have in terms of their service network, then we offer the service network to be able to support that for vehicles in the field. So it's a full one-shot deal, really. In reality, we can offer anything and all of that in between.
Fantastic. So I mean, look, if you've got an interest in this, head over to Spirit EV and also RBW to see the finished product, but Spirit EV to see the business in the box, because and I think John and I might be heading off to Lichfield in the not too distant
future. You're more than welcome. Absolutely. Why not? Yeah. Come and drive our cars. Yeah.
Ian, can I ask you a final question? If you could convert any classic vehicle using your kit, what does your heart tell you to convert? What would you want to do personally?
It's a great question. It's one I've considered many, many, many times. And it changes, if I'm honest with you. It changes with the seasons, and also, as we're coming up to summer, what would be better than having something like, I don't know, a fantastic, my favorite looking car is an AT Cobra. So what would be, and this is only my personal opinion, what would be better than having something that looks as beautiful as an AT Cobra with the instant torque of an electric motor and being as powerful or even more powerful than the original? Yes, I get your sound element to it a bit, but I'd generate some nice sounds come out of some speaker somewhere, so it looks the part, and you could drive it anywhere, and it'll be reliable, and it wouldn't be generating a lot of heat, because a lot of the other elements is classic cars generate a lot of heat, and ultimately you've got big engines, exhaust systems. You don't get that with electric vehicles. They're not generating the heat, so the creature comforts inside is you're not sitting there with with a big heat source right under your feet. So, yeah, so maybe that.
Shelby brought us the original, and you'd bring us the Millsy, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why not?
Millsy AC Cobra.
that is my nickname, as you could probably be aware. So, yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, on that wonderful note, it just behoves me to say thank you, Ian, for sharing your life's experiences over the last hour or so. And really giving us an insight into the confidence that we can take from all that you guys have done. Watch this space for a little video from John and I on tour as we have invited ourselves, really, over to see Spirit EV and to go for a spin.
You're more than welcome. We even have tours of retired engineers coming around and love what we do. So we're very open. It's a family business. It started as a family business. It's now gone very professional, obviously. But we're all about giving back, and it's a great team of nice people, but professionally run and professional services that we offer.
Sadly, Paul will only be able to drive in an electric van, and I get to do all the cars, which is fabulous.
Absolutely, yeah. What colour would you like to drive? You know,
every colour.
Okay. Well, that's brilliant. It, everybody.
Thank you
Head
so
over
much.
To the EV Cafe for more talks like this, and check out the guys. Connect with Ian and follow Spirit EV. Find them on LinkedIn and find them in the various places around the world. And look out for a classic electric car built by Spirit EV. Have a great day, everybody.